This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
It's a very appropriate yellow and green. Do you want the yellow? Is that better? There's no blue ones, you'll be happy to know. So you'll be fine with that. That's the formal part of the evening over with. Hopefully this will be a little bit more formative. And as James has said previously, you will all get an opportunity to ask questions later on. So feel free to hold on to those. I will just say that, obviously, I'm employed by the club on match days as a club ambassador. I'm not employed full-time by the club, so my remit here is to answer those questions I'm hoping some of you will want to ask, and also at times there'll be questions I'm sure I'll be told something back from the guys, and I will then obviously elaborate a little bit on that with my own views and stuff as well. I will not be wearing my yellow and green tinted glasses, as people might think I would be on an evening like this. I've been here for a lot of years, since the age of 14, so I've been through everything in terms of the academy, sold during a period of real tough times in Norwich when the club was going to administration. So I've kind of seen it all. So I'm here to push those questions to these guys and understand what the plans are for the future. But also, I'm like most of you out here today, I'm a fan of the club and want the club to do well, as everybody in this room does. So we'll start along that first of all. So welcome to both of you, to Mark and to Richard. Thanks for joining us up on stage. It's been since March now that you've been majority shareholders. How have you found it?
Is the mic working? Yeah. Well, I was saying to a couple of supporters here, we were up at this dais in the summer, and I walked in, and everybody said, USA, USA. And I thought the response tonight might be a little more muted. But look, it's been great. We love the community. Love the community, obviously, which we've been involved. Richard, you too. When we first looked at the club, we saw the game against Tottenham together, right? And so we sort of, I think we lost 5-1, maybe. So we knew what we could be in for, And so, sure, there are some challenges, but the challenges, our goal, and I know I probably shouldn't, I promised myself I wasn't going to start with this. Our goal is to get to the Premier League. In any event, our goal, okay, there we go. Our goal is to, sustainably be competitive. And so, on the descent this year, what it's done is it's exposed some of the challenges we have in the foundation for what we're trying to do. So the positive of that is we know areas we have to address, which we're actively addressing in a best practice way, really with global input. And you know, and with all that, we remain completely encouraged by the players we've recruited. We have to keep them healthy, but with the players we've recruited, we think we're very fortunate to have Philippe Clement join us. And, you know, this we know independently now. I've heard he was on list for some Premier League teams that were underperforming. And yet, you know, he chose us. He chose us after spending 5 hours with Ben and Neil and Zoe and others, Lee Dunn. And then 2-hour board process, which, you know, all the members of the board, me, Richard, Zoe, and Tom Smith, were active. 2-hour plus discussion that was quite interactive. So that I view as a positive. And I think, and I know we'll get to it, I know Ben's had been under fire. He showed an ability to make difficult decisions and stay on his plan, and we'll describe our plan tonight. Our plan for success here has not wavered, and you know, I think he showed a lot of strength in that. So, you know, I'm actually, this is going to sound odd too, given where we are, but I'm encouraged with where we are. And Rich and I, I'll let him comment. We are resolute in making this a success. We're committed to the long-term success of what we're doing here. And the moments when we have success will be sweeter because of what we face this year.
Well, that was some answer. And I think we'll pick some of that as we go along. But for you, Richard, how has it been? It's been a bit of a whirlwind. Football's very different, isn't it, compared to American sport? And it's, and by your own admissions, it's been a bit of a learning curve from day one.
When my son was 8, he was participating in a sporting event. Didn't go well. My brother was the coach and was very upset driving them home. And Andrew said a now famous in our family line, which is, "Uncle, sports are woof." And they are. You've got to be prepared to invest, commit to a program, and support it every which way each of us can. They ended up winning their little league that year, and he was surprised, as was I. But nonetheless, Mark and I got into this after 40 years now of being friends.
Now we're dating ourselves, right?
For the purpose of picking a project that wasn't going to be easy, but was one we really believed we could be successful doing. And we've been educating ourselves. We've had 3 years of watching before we took over. And we're, as we've agreed amongst ourselves, we're going to make errors, we're going to correct, and we're going to continue moving forward, doing the very best we can.
The difference with that little league was there was no promotion or relegation, I'm guessing. So that adds a whole new mix into the factor. And well, that kind of brings me on to the American sports side of it, because if you look at American sports, it's very, there's no promotion and relegation in terms of that sort of stuff. But also, it's very play-led, isn't it? It's very much stop and start in terms of that. Apart from basketball, which probably has a little bit more flow to the game, whereas football is 90 minutes of sheer terror and emotion. And it's a very different thing compared to the American sports side of it. So have you noticed that in terms of your, has it become a very much of an eye-opener to you, Mark, the difference in the type of sport being played and how fluid it is on the pitch?
Yeah, I'd say I've learned that the last 5 minutes of our matches are pure terror. And yeah, so what the promotion and relegation does is it brings more urgency to decisions. You know, I know one of the questions I know has been, you know, why did we wait so long to make a coaching change? So in American sports, that would be a rapid knee-jerk change, you know, 20% of the way into a season to change a coach. Yet, you know, you've got this clock ticking, and every game counts, as we know, and every goal counts, and every goal you give up counts against you. So there's a sense of urgency, but, you know, the sense of urgency allows for decisions that probably should be made anyway. So I'm someone who likes to have as much data as possible before making a decision, And so as you know, the supporters look at, you know, what took so long, I think for the last few games or so, you can put that on me, because I really wanted to be sure. Now, if we knew Philippe Clement was out there, that would have been easier 5 games earlier. But, you know, you don't know that you're going to be able to recruit a coach who can, importantly, not only get the kind of bounce we wanted this year, but for us, the focus on where we're going to be over the next, you know, several years. And he's really fits that design for a lot of reasons. And importantly, I think one of the things that attracted Philippe to the project here is that he knows we have this long-term vision and he wants to be engaged for several years. He didn't want to just come in to fix this year. So yeah, that was a challenge I wasn't accustomed to, but I think it's one that we, and I just point out again, since you know, I was talking to Ben on the way over, you know, Ben identified a number of coaches that we made outbound calls on, including, I guess we'd call Philippe a stretch candidate. And I think he and the entire group did a really good job of communicating over 5 hours what our, and in fact, what Philippe says, he said to us last night at a sponsored dinner, we were very realistic about our challenges. He said, most clubs just try to sell you. We gave him an honest appraisal of where we were and how we thought we could address it. And so I think that the team is pulled together in a really good way here, meaning that the entire management team, to, you know, address our challenges and to come up with answers.
I just want to pull back to that, mentioned the data side of it. And again, that side of American sport being very data-led in terms of plays and patterns of play and all that. And that has crept into football, and there's a big place. And I believe you're acquiring another data-led sports company to help with in that situation as well. So how can you think that translates? How does you believe that translates into football? Because they are very different models. There is obviously ways of it translating across, but can you explain to us how that should help?
Sure. You know, data is being used now in all sports, in all leagues. I assure you the top teams in the Premier League, because I talk to their owners, use data. And in the sporting press, a lot of times they get to a reductionist view. Oh, you're just looking at something on a computer to pick a player. Nothing could be further from the truth, right? Data is just information that it's more information for us. And so the club, by the way, Stuart Weber saw the move into this, you know, years ago, and we had, you know, 3 or 4 people in our analytics department when Richard and I were first looking at the club. And frankly, 2 of them were sort of going in one direction and 2 in the other, and it wasn't very integrated. And so we decided to do a best-in-class review of how we could, you know, get a data consultant. And so we focused on SRC football a couple of years ago when we first knew we were going to be quite involved, and when Ben was coming on. And it was a review, actually, that we conducted on our side, that I had our folks in Milwaukee who are expert in data science do the interviews. And we picked on SRC as the best option. And working with them a couple of years, we realized that to really optimize things, we should buy the data group. By the way, we bought it into Norfolk Holdings, so we're not burdening, you know, what we're trying to do in getting players with, you know, some of the costs here. And it provides information in the early, you know, how you apply data to football, English football, is complicated because there's a lot of motion. Mm. And so it would be a mistake to think that we're taking information even that we have now with an established group that have done this probably for 12 years and saying that's how we're making our decisions. It's just one of the information pinpoints to put in, along with what our recruitment people say, what people see with their eyes, you know, what our coaches see with their eyes, you know. All that being said, you know, again, we're talking about today, not backwards looking, but, you know, Philippe really likes that we have data to him, and we're looking at some performance data and injury data with a person who's specialist in it in our group to see if there's anything we can learn about the injuries we're suffering besides what, you know, we might otherwise know in terms of number of days we train or whatnot. So it's an important tool that we have, and what we're trying to do is bring best practices to everything we do here. We want to have, you know, the best analytics first of all, we want to have the best team on the pitch, right? To do that, we want to have, you know, on the sporting side, the best coach, the best recruitment, the best player development, and all the information we can get, the best medical training. And likewise, on the business side, we're going to look to do the best we can also. And sure, you know, we've really started to look at things, you know, since March. And again, I would just say that where we've had challenges, that gives us something to focus on intensely, which we are. And, you know, if we were sort of mid-table and obviously we'd like to be Coventry right now, but if we were mid-table and bumping along, we might not have the sharp focus on what challenges we have that we have now. And we're, you know, we're putting a lot of people hours into this.
It's really interesting that the study of the data and how it transcends across different types of sports. And there is a place for it, I think, in terms of the physiological side of it from sport and the players and the profiles. But when it comes to recruitment, I think it's a very different thing. And there has been rumours or people saying the stuff that, look, you know, there's too much recruitment on data. Now, we all know, and Ben's come out and spoken, it's probably a question for Ben shortly later on, is about the recruitment side of the data and how much that is used in tracking players and buying players. Because I get it, at the top end of the football pyramid, the Premier League, the data sits up against almost immediately making a decision on a player because they're probably performing pretty well in the league they're in, and that generally could be one of the top leagues in Europe, the Spanish league, the Serie A, or something like that. So you have that. When you're in the Championship, how does that data on player profile help to try and recruit players from when they're playing in lower leagues throughout Europe, because they're clearly not as good a players at that time because they're not being scouted by the bigger teams? So how does that work? Because can that not be a bit false at times? It can give you a picture of something that's, they're probably not as good as they appear?
Bad information in, bad information out. You've hit the issue. And what we rely on is data just gives you some information for people to make decisions off of. There's the eye test. There's all the ways you would normally recruit. As Ben's told us, we're in the business of recruiting often younger, high upside players where we can get value on the pitch from players that cost us somewhat less. You take risks in order to get reward. And that's got to be part of your thought process. All the data provides you with is additional information to make good decisions, but the decisions are either good or bad based on the people who ultimately make them. And right now, as Mark and I said, we're very early in this process. We have a lot of enthusiasm for the process and the people who are making the decisions. We've had very, very bad outcomes in the first third of the season, first quarter to third of the season. And we have both expectations and confidence that the program is right. Are we executing it as well as we had hoped? Not yet.
Well, look, they're all human beings. It's difficult to get a finished article when you are buying those younger players. The profile of the players has changed slightly as well. If you look, obviously under Ben's time now, there's been a big switch in the summer. And even before, I think it's 26 signings, is it, Ben? Something like 26 signings over that period of 2 years, which is a lot of players to turn over in a football team, which takes time to settle. Also, the profile of those players have generally been younger players. There's obviously been a few older ones mixed in there as well. Looking back on it, has that been a if you look at the success Norwich has had with players like Sara and Borgia and Josh and even Emi Buendia before that, and Nunez, I know we don't like him very much, but they sort of joined the football club in their early 20s and were successful in their mid-20s, and then the value increased and they moved on. It took them 18 months or 2 years to become those type of players. When we're signing such young players, 18, 19, are we going to have to wait till they're 24, 25 to see their best before their value? Because you talked about the future and how you want this club to progress and where we want to get to. But there's also the now, and the now is not going as well as we all want it to and hope it to. So is the profile of the player potentially not been mixed right within the balance?
So, you know, Ben can answer these things better than we can.
Sorry, Ben, you can think on it now.
But especially some of the detail is how he might use data or otherwise. But first of all, a club like this has always had to, even when there wasn't the asymmetry in money going into the leagues, had to develop players and sell them and all that. And a reminder to everyone that, you know, what has been new for me, although I knew what I was getting into, in Major League Baseball in the United States, you have a player for 6 years no matter what. His agent can stand on his head, he can threaten things, whatever. That player isn't going anywhere. This is a very different paradigm here, and in part because if you don't do right by the player, then it's going to be hard to get the next great young player. So, you know, Gabriel Sara came from South America. He had an opportunity to, he thought, get to a League One, you know, first league club, where first division club, where he might have a better shot at getting to the, you know, national team back in South America. And he was great for us. So he asked to leave. You know, Borges wanted to go to and don't forget, when the way this works, there's all this money that sloshes around. Contracts get ripped up. Everybody makes money on one of these. The team gets paid for selling a player. The player gets his contract extended at much higher prices. And somewhere the agent's taking money. And if you don't do well by your players, then you're not going to be a destination. We want to be a destination for everyone, for players, for coaches, for, you know, personnel to work for Ben and otherwise. So the player has something to do. There's a certain player who went, you know, to Suffolk County that he really wanted to leave. And this is on him. You know, it's not on us. But we'll see how that all works out. We know what the early returns are. I think we, you know, in order to do what we're trying to do, we're going to have to develop young players and sustainably have a wave of them so that as those players get sold, there's another young player coming up behind. We didn't have that before. What we had is, you know, Borgia or Josh or, you know, sometimes you think you're going to have Johnny Rowe forever and then you don't. So you need to have a lot of young players, right? Well,
this is my point. So these players generally in recent years in particular, and this isn't just a Norwich thing, this is a football thing in general, they've had probably a good 6 months and they've moved on. And so they've been here for a little while, but they've played a good 6 months in terms of the profile of the player and played well, moved on with the 6 months' time. If that's always going to be the case, at what point do you not sell them? Because if the ambition is to get to the Premier League, you want to keep your best players here. As much as some of them don't want to be here, how do we do that? How do we get around that? At what point do we say, okay, we want to build something that's going to keep them here?
I wish I could say it was our choice, you know, to not sell Gabriel Sara, to not sell Borgia Sainz. You know, Richard and I have agreed we would pay within headroom to pay for every one of these players. You know, we could have easily sold Josh Sargent, as everybody knows, and we didn't. But you need to, it's a dynamic. It's not, and then it's a dynamic with what you do with that money with, you know, to get other young players. So if we, you know, where we had an issue is probably in execution, right? So we went in the first trading window, in the first summer window we traded, went from the third oldest to the third youngest team. Then we went from the third youngest team to the youngest. And with all that, and, you know, the number of players from the number of countries and the difference in coaches, you know, and the medical challenges, which are very real, you know, we are where we are right now. But, you know, I guarantee you a coach of the caliber of Philippe Clement would not have come here if he didn't look at what we had as really something he could do something with.
I totally agree. I think it's a great point.
So it's an execution issue. It's not a... We have had, and Rich, you can comment, we have had, we absolutely believe in the plan we have, and we are going to work to execute better. And, you know, we know we would have benefited by maybe having everybody can conjecture more, another veteran or two on the pitch. It certainly would have helped to have one or two less injuries. Mm. But it's the execution of the plan, not the foundation of the plan.
But we are sitting second bottom in the championship, Richard, and we talked about the future, but the now needs to be sorted. And with PSR rules and finance and how much you can spend and can't spend, how are we going to get out of this? Because the squad is quite swollen. It's quite a big squad as it is, which means there's probably going to have to be some outgoings to bring people in. So how are we going to go about... Obviously, you said previously you're both willing to put investment into the club for the squad and build the squad and get it better and better. But how can we do that when we find ourselves in the current position? Because come January, I guarantee now, if we're sat in the bottom three in January, that's very difficult to recruit the type of players you need to get you out of that trouble, because they don't want to come. That's talking from the next player's point of view. So how do we change that? So I guess now we're looking at the new manager to try and get on a winning run to be able to get us out of that, to see the constant upward curve, to then obviously then be able to bring those better players in. And, as you've just alluded to, the quality of the manager he is will hopefully bring those type of players in as well.
You're asking a question which I don't think Mark has an answer to, that we can say yes or no, or do this or do that. We can't. What we can do and what we can say is that we're bringing in the strongest players we can. We have, hopefully, the January window to help us. We have some headroom for the January window. We have some, what may be the best part of the January window will be us getting our players healthy and back on the pitch who are off. So we have to rely on what we think is a very strong group of leaders on the pitch and off the pitch behind them to make the best of what we believe was a very expensive team that we believe has very strong players in it. And if we can get them all healthy and on the pitch and working with a top tier manager, we believe we'll work our way out of this.
And I think only time will tell on that. And of course, touch on the new manager. I think he's a great appointment. I think he's a very different profile to the manager we've had previously in terms of Johannes and Liam. So was the thinking a different type of route, a different type of manager that commands that respect straight away? Was there a kind of change in thoughts, Mark, in terms of why you chose that manager?
You know, and I think it all depends on who's available at the time. So interestingly, Philippe, you know, was recovering from hip surgery or hip situation. So I'm not sure he would have been available this summer. And so sometimes you're limited by who's in front of you at the time, because things happen very fast between the end of the season and then the opening of training camp and then the transfer window. I'd also mention a couple things, and I don't mean to put words in whatever, but what I was objecting to in your question, Richard, you sound like you're nervous and you're scared. We don't get scared at things. I know this is really difficult. This is not even close to the toughest situation either of us has faced in our business careers. Not close. It's out of our control once it goes on the pitch, so that's uncomfortable. But we are very committed and confident that we can see this through. That's the first thing. Second thing is all these players that we're talking about, we have them under contract for many cases of 2029, for years. And we're losing players who were going to leave anyway at some point. Sarah, Borja, many of whom we tried to sign and they chose not. You know, let's not forget, we gave, you know, one of our board members was referring to making a reference to someone who would go to Ipswich as a Judas, you know. So we tried to sign that person. He did not want to be here. We put huge resources, as Richard said, behind the players that we brought in, and we have several years. Now, that said, relegation is not an option, and I know it's out of our control. I'm not, you know, have everybody leave and say, oh, I know, I like the way they refer to us as the Americans. You know, the Americans are crazy. But what do they know? We're at the, look at the table. Right? Right. That said, we are going to address this, and we are going to do everything we can, including making improvements in the transfer window, which Ben and his team and the coach and his team and Lee Dunn and his team are going to try to get the type of player we need at that time to make sure that we, and by the way, just for what it's worth, so maybe we're all crazy, nobody, I'm just telling you, we were in meetings yesterday with Ben and his staff for 2 hours. Me and Rich and my son Mike were in with the coach for 80 minutes. Nobody talks about getting out of relegation. Everybody talks about getting into the middle of the table. That's the focus, is to try to have real progress this year so that next year we can take the next step. And that's the kind of, can-do attitude that we need. And by the way, I'm just going to mention the supporters. The crowd on Saturday was unbelievable, because we understand how, we were as unhappy watching all this as everybody. And the crowd really got behind the team, the support, the entire stadium, very quick, unbelievable. And that definitely contributed to what was a great result for us. And the players can feel that. So, there's a very different energy right now. And we understand we'll go to Watford on Saturday and we'll see what happens. But, the energy is real. And we appreciate the passion that the supporters have. We appreciate the supporters. You all make us better, right? I probably would have been even slower to the coach. By the way, Ben Ben was referencing we're going to have to do something here, but I might have said let's give it another game. Let's give it. And of course, it would be ultimately if he said we got to go, which he did. He finally said we have to do this. By the way. And the supporters helped push that, right? The supporters, you all helped us make the right decision to postpone things at Carrow Road, which we'll talk about later. That was the right decision, because we the way the timing went with the permits and all that, we didn't have a chance to really get everybody's input and make sure that everybody's on the same, journey together, what we want to do there. So this, everybody here and their passion makes us better. What attracted us to the club is how much passion this community has for this football club.
I can tell you, ultimately, you get things right out there on the football pitch, all of that stuff generally takes care of itself. It becomes a lot easier to deal with, in my opinion. We're going to go on to the stadium stuff now, Richard, and just talk a little bit about that and how that came about. It was a disappointment to everybody, for the season ticket holders to be told they'd be moved out of their seats. Way fans being moved, it came as a bit of a shock to everybody. And as Marcus just said, there was a reason behind the announcement coming out when it did. It just coincided in just before the Ipswich Town game, which didn't help. The communication wasn't great, and I think we've all opened up and spoken about that and said it wasn't good enough. So where are we with those plans now? And is it a case of just, look, back seat, we made a mistake, hold our hands up and we go again?
Let's just take it by step. First, it's on hold. We're not doing anything at the stadium this coming season. Second, how did we get into a testy situation with something that we in management thought was a very good program to do? And it's very simple. We thought we had two seasons to go before we would be able to upgrade the stadium. And Mark said it best earlier today. He said, we have three choices with Carrow Road. One, let it decline and fall apart. Two.
Which, by the way, some people, teams do in all sports, because they won't spend the money.
Two, upgrade the Carrow Road facility to maintain its historic greatness and bring it into the requirements of Premier League ultimately, and just a great place where we can continually improve the experience that fans have when they're there. Or three, let it decline and ultimately build a new stadium someplace else outside of Carrow Road. Those are your three choices. We made the assumption that everybody wanted choice to. That may be right, it may be wrong, but that was the assumption we made. And we thought it would take at least 2 years. I brought in some support for the team from our real estate company, and they were able to figure out a way to get it done by the 27 season. And we got excited. I said, that's great. If we can get a plan done that we developed by the 27 season, let's go. And we were able to pull it together, but it required a filing, a disclosure, a filing with the planning, et cetera, on that date. We totally missed what we were planning and should have done, which is the whole interaction with the supporter base to make sure that we were doing it in the best way possible and bring everybody along on, as Mark described, the journey as to how we got there. When we realized where we were and the chances of us being in the Premier League next year dissipated, it became fairly obvious, and Mark called it, and I agreed completely, and the whole team did, that we should put it on hold and go back to stage one. Which of the three choices do we want as a community? Phase two, if we were right and we guessed right that it's number two, upgrade Caro over time, then communicate back and forth with the entire community as to how we were going to do it and why we were going to do it and bring everybody along on that journey. And that's where we are today.
It was the perfect storm, wasn't it, at the time? It was just the timing, Ipswich Town, Nunes dropping down the table, all these things happened at once, which made, I think, it quite an emotive subject, and still an emotive subject for all Norwich City fans. And I think it's important to understand where that comes from and as a community and put those things right. And you've rightly backed down and said, look, we will communicate, and I'm sure some people have some questions about it later on. So it's important to understand that, Mark.
But that's the history.
Yeah, that's history. But also I think that even if we didn't have, you know, Nunes and we didn't have, you know, I think because of the timing where we thought we needed to get ready to meet the Premier League 3,000 seat requirement, we didn't have the proper time to communicate with the supporters. And even then, I think we've all owned up to how we did communicate was not what, you know, we just need to do better. And we will do better next time, I promise everybody that.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And by the way, just to be clear, because we still, you know, get questions, no one's seat, right? No one's seat is getting moved next year. Everybody next year will be sitting exactly where they sit right now.
You'll have a chance to ask your questions very shortly, I promise. So just hold on to it for a minute if you can. We'll shortly be running... wrapping up on here with these two, and the other guys are going to come up and join us on stage as well, so I'm going to open to the floor. But just finally for me, how do you intend to kind of build that relationship with the fans again? Because it has been damaged. You know, people have been really hurt from this, and I think I didn't expect it to be make such a big impression as it did, and I've been here a lot of years, and I think it's now we have to understand that and how we can move on from that. So I have and I can only talk from my own experiences, and I'm an ambassador here on match days, and I see lots of supporters here all the time and talk and away from the grounds. And just to use one of my experiences as an example, we have match hosting on a day. We have a player come up before the game. We have a player come up after the game to talk in front of the supporters, which they love. And the children come up and everybody gets entertained by it, despite whatever the result is. Now, I can tell you within the last... particularly last season, it was really difficult for the staff and the players to be, or the staff and the ambassadors to be able to fulfill that role because the players weren't coming up after a game. So, and that's where you build those relationships with the supporters, getting the players up in and around the fans. Because I tell you what, if you're a fan or you're a player and things aren't going well like they are on a pitch now, you get a little bit more grace from the supporters if they get to know you well and they want you to do well. If there's always that division, which I think there has been, those gaps grow, and I think probably the leeway in terms of respect and actually caring loses. You lose that, and I think we've seen a little bit of that. So we need to work on that as well internally within the football club to improve those relationships. Would you say?
So what today we had, I think the most, and I've been on the board here for four years, And I think we had, and Tom Smith can, that was as interactive a discussion as we've had in years. And a big part of the discussion was how to better communicate with the supporters broadly, not just, I mean, yeah, we know what we did with the stadium, but broadly on all topics. And so, you know, the answer is tonight, I don't have the exact game plan for how we're going to do it, but we're going to do it in every area that we can, and I'm going to commit that we're going to, you know, do better, because we are committed to not only having a team that sustainably wins, we're committed to a great fan experience, we're committed to being a leader in the community, which, you know, I think we had a video on tonight, and separately, which may not, you know, focus most of the people here on, but we're also committed to being a great place to work. So we are going to broadly in those areas communicate better with the supporters in multiple ways, some of which, by the way, may be ways we reach out to all of you, not through, you know, everybody has full-time jobs, and I think we want to be more visible, but we also may find experts in different areas to get information from supporters and third-party, you know, experts, so that we can address, you know, all of that. So, for example, what you just said, that's the first that I've heard anyway about the players, and no excuses. We'll just, you know, we'll figure out how to do that.
When one of the things we want to pursue is excellence in everything we do. And what you just described is a lack of excellence in fan engagement. And it's a focus now of at least our board meetings. And we're committed to be excellent in every aspect of the four things Mark just described. And that's part of it. And we will work at it and we will achieve it, because literally that's what we're about.
This episode of Unfiltered is brought to you by Google Gemini. U.S. college students get Gemini's Pro plan free for 1 year and use the best model in the world for multimodal understanding. So whether you're uploading a video to get feedback on your presentation, uploading a photo of your homework to ask for extra help, or transcribing notes from a lecture you missed, Gemini 3 Pro can help. I'm honestly so happy and excited for all the college students out there, because I wish this was around back when I was in school. This is such a game changer and so useful. I'm honestly a little jealous. So if you want to try it out, sign up to get more access to Google's most accurate model, Gemini 3 Pro. Unlimited image uploads, pro-level image editing, higher limits in Notebook LM, Gemini in Gmail and Docs, 2 terabytes of storage, and more. All you have to do is visit gemini.google/students to learn more and sign up. Terms apply.
Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com. RITERUG.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.